A sharp pain, a fall, and suddenly everything changes. At 43, flat on his back after emergency surgery, a professional provocateur who'd spent years ridiculing society's oddballs had an unsettling realization. What if there's more to these people than punchlines? This wasn't some Damascus Road conversion, just a nagging question that wouldn't go away. What drives someone to the absolute edges of acceptable thought? Why do people embrace ideas so extreme they become social outcasts? The answers turned out to be far more human than expected. Nearly every extremist interviewed carried significant childhood trauma. The professor advocating for borderless nations had fragmented memories of possible molestation. The anti-work activist watched her workaholic father suffer health crises while missing every meaningful moment. The anti-Semitic conspiracy theorist didn't meet his father until 27. The Las Vegas sex worker describing herself as a predator, her father bought her a house, yet she gravitates toward relationships where she's valued as a trophy because of her race. The drag performer picked flowers alone in Mormon, Utah, while his brother dominated at sports. The professional cuddler, molested by multiple family members, now charges $80 an hour for the safe touch she never received. These aren't random data points. They're a roadmap showing how childhood wounds become adult crusades. A controlling psychiatrist father who institutionalized his daughter? She ends up in BLM protests during her divorce, dating someone guaranteed to horrify her parents, moving to the Bronx Projects while claiming there's no violence, though she won't bring her own children there. The ideologies might be illogical, but the path toward them makes perfect sense when traced backward. People don't randomly embrace fringe ideologies. They're trying to make sense of pain that never healed. Some activists prioritize social validation over factual consistency. Emily, a beauty publicist who became involved in protest movements during a difficult divorce, found community and belonging in activist circles. Her statements reveal internal contradictions, describing her neighborhood as entirely safe, while simultaneously acknowledging that parents, including herself, restrict their children's outdoor activities due to safety concerns. This performative stance serves a psychological function, a form of rebellion against an emotionally restrictive upbringing where expressing personal needs was discouraged. One social media influencer's profile demonstrates a deliberate strategy. Come for the curves, stay for the words. She uses attention-grabbing content to build an audience, then introduces ideological messaging about dietary choices. This calculated approach illustrates how contemporary extreme viewpoints spread through initial provocation followed by ideological persuasion. Particularly concerning was an interview with an advocate who claimed to support child welfare while simultaneously attempting to normalize attraction to minors. When questioned about whether such individuals seek access to children, he acknowledged some do, revealing the fundamental contradiction in his position. For many individuals, radical ideological frameworks provide identity, purpose, and social recognition. By the conversation's conclusion, Emily demonstrated self-awareness. I think I'm just in a place in my life where I'm angry. I think I do have too much hatred in my heart. She connected her activism to feeling like a lost child, seeking community while navigating a custody dispute. The performative exterior gave way, revealing underlying emotional struggles. For some, conspiracy theories aren't delusions. They're frameworks that make chaos comprehensible. According to one African nationalist, Jewish people control both the KKK and the NAACP, orchestrated the Holocaust against themselves, and are behind everything from coronavirus to gangster rap. When confronted with this logical impossibility, he explains, "The way the Jews operate, they always on both sides. You're never on the losing side because you're on all sides all the time." Absurd, yet seductive, a single explanation for all suffering. This worldview provides order to disordered lives. The Stalinist distributing Frito-Lay chips defends gulags as humane. The Native American activist who toppled a Columbus statue compares Fort Snelling to flying a Nazi flag over Auschwitz and celebrated January 6th, hoping this country's coming to an end. The climate activist admits we're not going to die in 7 years, yet warns of potential human extinction. These frameworks transform powerlessness into righteous struggle, creating order from disorder and purpose from pain. The theories might be false, but the psychological comfort is real. Many radicals reject fundamental boundaries entirely. A University of Toronto professor argues borders are inherently unfair, but dodges implementation questions. I don't want to play that game. A Missouri mommy blogger practices respectful parenting, treating toddlers as negotiating equals. Her children walk barefoot for grounding, skip school and doctors, have no bedtimes. Despite this boundary-free approach, she admits constant exhaustion and back pain, relying on medical marijuana for relief. An ecosexual influencer, who considers herself in a sexual relationship with Earth, rejects conventional sexuality definitions. She likens natural experiences to bedroom activities, the sun's heat like temperature play, wind's chill like sensation exploration. Though currently with a human partner, she maintains fluid sexuality and dislikes too many rules. This rejection extends to legal norms. A sex worker advocates government-monitored prostitution with cameras in every room. A psychedelic enthusiast suggests drug offenders work at bakeries instead of serving jail time. For many, boundary rejection serves as rebellion against restrictive childhoods. The permissive parent directly counters her upbringing of verbal and physical abuse. The BLM activist rejects her controlling psychiatrist father. They're not just rejecting boundaries, they're rejecting the people who enforced them. When childhood offers isolation instead of belonging, radical communities provide what families didn't. The Ukrainian Jew who became a Vodou high priestess found spiritual family through Haitian ceremonies, drumming, Creole singing, rituals connecting visible and spiritual realms. After caring for her mentally ill mother and enduring toxic relationships, Vodou brought healing. The professional cuddler creates judgment-free spaces for safe touch. Molested by multiple family members, she now provides the nurturing connection she never received. Her clients, people with non-cuddling partners, PTSD sufferers, those between relationships, all seek human connection modern society denies. The emotional support squirrel caretaker surrounds herself with animals offering unconditional love, creating controlled comfort far from her alcoholic, abusive father's chaos. Even disturbing extremists seek community. The transgender woman who identifies as a wolf monitors predator chat rooms as a counter-trafficking activist, bizarre beliefs channeled toward protecting her chosen community. These radical communities offer acceptance without judgment. Through spiritual practices, shared activism, or online forums, extremists find the belonging they lacked. This explains why logical arguments fail. Changing beliefs means losing community and identity. After countless conversations with society's radicals, mockery shifted to compassion, not agreement, but understanding. Their stories reveal how unhealed wounds manifest as extreme beliefs, how childhood trauma shapes adult ideology in predictable patterns. Yet compassion doesn't mean endorsement. Many of these ideologies would cause tremendous harm to the very people they claim to help. The challenge lies in addressing legitimate grievances without embracing destructive solutions. Prison reform advocates correctly identify incarceration problems, but we shouldn't criminalize crime goes too far. Climate activists raise valid concerns, but blocking traffic that increases emissions demonstrates counterproductive extremism. Here's the uncomfortable truth. Many radicals project personal problems onto society, demanding systemic upheaval to address individual wounds. The radicals interviewed aren't aliens. They're wounded humans seeking what we all seek through misguided means. Perhaps the most radical act is simply listening, not to mock, but to understand. Their stories warn what happens when childhood wounds go unhealed, when families fracture, when communities dissolve.